Well, good afternoon, almost evening, 5:08 p.m., the latest I have ever done my morning walk on February 18th, I think, Saturday. They got away from me, just totally got away from me. The morning was spent working on some computer issues, and then the next thing I knew, I was trying to scrounge up some lunch, and I did some fiddling about with family, and the next thing I knew, it was, oh my God, it's 4 o'clock, I haven't done my walk, I've got to fix supper, what am I going to do? What did I put on my shoes? So, I'm walking. What I'm thinking about is, it's really Saturday? Yes, I think it's Saturday, which tells you where I am in terms of mental capacity at the moment. The students in my class have really risen to the occasion of having to get their synthesis pieces together on Friday or Saturday. There's been a lot of work with the class. And while there's still a certain undertone of, I really don't want to do this, but since I have to, here's my post. I have to say that for the most part, they're doing a good job of looking at Hughes much more critically than they looked at Postman. Part of it, I think, is that Hughes is a much drier book. It's much more oriented toward the history of technology. And he talks a lot about the idea of man's attempt to bring a utopia to the earth, to bring the Garden of Eden back through technological means. And for some of them, it's interesting. Some of them have a very strong biblical sense, and that all gifts flow from the Almighty, etc. And of those, they seem to be pretty evenly split between, well, the intelligence and the wherewithal to make these creations came from the mind of man, but the mind of man was developed by God, so therefore, this seems perfectly logical. And there's another faction that says, well, this is bound to failure because whenever humans are involved, there will be failure. The scripture quoting hasn't really started too much yet, which I found quite gratifying. But it's still interesting to see how these students relate to this reading, which is, while secular, giving a very serious nod to the sacred in regards to technology, education, and culture. So it's a fascinating read, and I hope that they're able to actually read each other's works and understand what it is that they're seeing. The problem is, of course, that they're seeing their own stuff, and then not really reflecting on what everybody else is writing, which is kind of an issue. So, yeah. I spent part of the day today helping another writer get a Kismet installed on their blog. Yeah, it wouldn't have been a big deal, except that when they pasted their API key in, something went wrong, and the entire back admin panel choked and fell apart. And we did manage to get the WordPress installation upgraded, reinstalled, and that helped a great deal. And I suspect that what happened was that it was somewhat infected, which is problematic. I don't know that for sure. So yeah, that was, it's always interesting working with somebody else's site and trying to help them, trying to walk them through the process without actually doing it for them. And they don't really understand what it is that you're saying because they're not reading the screen, which is an interesting idea. Because they're reading the screen to hear your question, but they're not actually making the transfer over to look at the screen that has the answer. That was frustrating. But ultimately, we got it put together. We got the website rebuilt. Got the blog reestablished. And we got the Akismet key installed. So now there's automatic spam filtering. I've also been reading the last book that I've assigned to the students, the one that's coming up in about 5 weeks. I'm trying to get ahead of them on that one so that I can put up some writing prompts. It's a fascinating read from Henry Jenkins about the what kinds of ways, how to deal with participatory culture in education. And I think it's going to be an interesting take with the students because they'll be working with Postman and then Hughes and the Human Built World, and we'll be getting into philosophy and art in the last part of that book. And then we'll talk about education more directly with Larry Cuban's book, Machine in the Classroom. I just blanked on the title. Sorry, I can't remember the Jenkins book either. I just remember what it looks like. But Jenkins has some interesting takes, and he's done a very good job, I think, of examining some of the ideas of participatory culture, stuff that most of us in the potosphere have thought about for a long time and come to grips with, to the point where it's not really something that we think about much anymore because we've kind of dealt with it. So it's rather shocking to find that there are people, in fact, in this potosphere who don't know, for example, what Creative Commons really is and why you use it and how it relates to copyright. So it's interesting to play with some of these ideas. But Jenkins has a really excellent idea, an excellent description of distributed cognition. Now, distributed cognition is that this idea that we don't learn in a vacuum, but in fact we learn as part of a group. We actually learn based on something called social constructivism, by constructing meaning based on what everybody around us thinks. And that's good and it's bad, because if the people around you are idiots, then you're going to learn stuff that's probably not quite useful, although you won't know that it's not useful until you try to use it in any meaningful way. So that's a bit of a problem. But this idea of distributed cognition, which says that people work as groups, they seldom work alone. This is true. That if you work alone, then you need to know a lot more in order to accommodate all the different skills and talents needed to accomplish anything truly complex. But instead, you work with a group. So, like, I work with the people at Audiobooks. I work with, to a certain extent, I work with listeners. I work with beta readers. So it's interesting to think that Jenkins has generalized this idea to devices as well. so that it's not proper to think of a student using a calculator as cheating, as much as distributing the cognitive load of the mathematical operation between his brain and the mechanical bits in the device, the digital bits in the device. It's really how much is 47 plus 32 isn't really significant. It's knowing that you need to add them together to find the sum, because it's the sum that you want. And he extends it to iPads and iPhones and all of the computers. All the devices that we use to connect with both each other and information stores where we can find answers to questions that we might have. And that this process, this distributed process, is actually much more valuable in the modern era, because there is so much information, there is so much knowledge. The idea that everyone could know all there is to know and be able to retrieve it appropriately is silly. So if we have to specialize, if we have to pick something to learn, then learning how to learn, learning how to index, learning how to, in fact, distribute our cognition across devices, using devices to connect with other people and distributing our cognition through them as well, in order to find the answers to questions that are meaningful to us in our daily lives, that's an important skill. And it's something that I do all the time, and I never really thought about how it is and what it works. And I see all the criticism of, particularly when teachers talk about using calculators, and I think, you just don't understand what the calculator is doing. You think the calculator is giving you an answer, and that it is, but as King Seamus had said, all technology is both blessing and curse, and the problem with the calculator is the same thing as the advantage of the calculator. It gives you an answer. As a human, as a person, it's up to you to figure out whether or not the calculator's answer is correct in relation to the question that you asked. Because the calculator is always going to give you the correct answer to the question that you asked, but the problem is that you may have asked the wrong question. And the calculator isn't going to be able to help you with that. So learning how to ask proper questions is a key skill. Getting the answers is really quite trivial. Asking the right question is really where the skill is. And that was another idea that Jenkins had in this book. The idea of farmers and hunters. That the mindset that we have been trained to accept in formal education, in school, is those people who can concentrate on a very small piece of some larger domain for an extended period of time until they have mastered it. And that's what we reward in school, is people who are very highly focused and who are very adept at staying focused on a very small portion of the world. But the hunter mentality is more like what we think about when we talk about multitaskers, or people who are engaged in what they're starting to call continuous partial attention, meaning I'm paying partial attention to a lot of different inputs, watching for when they change, watching for when there's something of interest to flag me. And the more of these that I can scan continuously, the more likely it is that I'm going to see something that's of interest or of import or meaningful in some way to my existence. That's what I do. And I didn't have a good model for that. I didn't have a good analogy for what it is that I'm doing with this multitasking. It's the thing that teachers really hate about students, because they think they're not paying attention while they're busy texting, and in some cases, of course, they're not. But the reality is that the ability to screen a variety of channels, looking for the things that are significant, is really what pisses teachers off, because what that means is what they're saying is not significant. And I understand why it pisses them off, but rather than try to deal with why isn't it significant and making it so, they try to cut out the external stimuli that are causing, and I'll use their term, distractions. So some interesting ideas that are coming out of this free ebook. It's a fascinating, it's going to be fascinating to see what these classroom teachers have to say about some of these ideas. That, you know, the problem with kids, the problem with education, isn't that the kids aren't paying attention. The problem is you're boring. And this isn't something that's particularly new. That's what I try to keep telling the students when they start talking about things that were true when I was in school back in the 60s, the late 50s and early 60s. A lot of the things that they're complaining about their students doing now, well, they're doing this now because of the technology. It's like, no, because this was all true when I was in school as well. Blaming parents is looked at as being something very brand new, because before, you know, the students, the parents and the teachers were gang up on the kids. Nobody ever blamed the parents. Nobody ever pointed fingers at poor upbringing as a reason for kids not learning. Yeah, right. That was a biggie when I was a kid. It's still a biggie. It's still a problem. I mean, there are problems with parents and kids in school, and some of the problems are that the parents aren't, now, I don't want to say, because I'm as guilty of this as anybody, but I, you know, it's like the kid has to learn how to navigate the school. The kid has to learn how to navigate the school. For me to beat it into him doesn't teach him the lesson. It just teaches them that what they can't do is get caught. So I have a very, perhaps, laissez-faire approach, and that's that, yeah, you're going to fail a class if you don't do your homework, and if you fail the class, then you're going to get grounded, and you're going to take away your computer, and we might do some other things, I don't know. I mean, so far we haven't done an awful lot of stuff, because, frankly, I don't want to be the kind of parent that punishes decisions arbitrarily. That's important for kids to learn, like I did not, that actions have consequences. That actions have real consequences, not artificial consequences imposed by parents. So that's an interesting idea and an important lesson. And part of that is the fault of the teacher to flunk the kid. Now, I'm not going to go back on the teacher, which is really what their complaint is. I'm not going to go back to the teacher and say, why did you fail my kid? Because the answer is, teacher didn't fail the kid failed. And minor, as prone to failure as anyone's. So this whole idea that, you know, this is a new problem, that parents are the issue, it's not really. The problem with society is the issue. And nobody really wants to deal with that. Nobody wants to deal with the fact that probably 60% of all school-age kids are living in poverty across the country. In some areas, it's 80% of the school qualifies for low-cost subsidized lunches. Why is that? How is that possible? It's because we build schools to serve those communities, because we reward communities that do well, and we don't want those kids bringing our schools down. Yeah, that's exactly what is happening. So it's an interesting problem. How do we deal with a society that doesn't value education as much as it values credential? And how do we cope with that? So I don't know. It's going to be an interesting challenge. I'm waiting for education to have its Arab Spring. It's Egypt moment. I'm waiting for parents to understand that what's being done to them by the government in the name of education is really not serving either them or their children, but is instead serving politics. So anyway, I made it around. I gotta go make some mashed potatoes, get some gravy going, see if I've got a vegetable for dinner. But I'm at the back gate, and Tara pointed out that I'm not plotting correctly on my map anymore. Apparently, I didn't upload all the files. I'm still trying to find them. I know I have through 1,000 miles, but I've only loaded through mile 520. I'm already up to mile 560-something. So anyway, tomorrow's another day, and I'll talk to you then.